This is CliffCentral.com.
First thing I just need to get off my chest. There's always a rant. There's something in the. I'm so sick of hearing this. I listen to a bunch of podcasts, and sometimes you get good ones, and you may listen to more than one episode, and sometimes you stumble upon bad ones, and you listen to absolutely 5 seconds of it, and you realize this is total shit. Started listening to one yesterday, and this guy's going on about how the world is more unequal now than it's ever been. Which is...
In terms of everything.
No. It's only unequal if you focus on the top 20 richest people in the world.
I was going to say, does it have to do with money?
Because most people in the world are living better now than they've ever lived, or any of their ancestors ever lived. This is a fact, right? In 20 years, global poverty has been halved. Even for the poorest person in the world today, they are better off than they would have been if they were around 20 years ago. It's better. I'm sick of hearing this propaganda. People keep trying to make it look like the world's getting worse. Please don't believe this. The reason people tell you this is because it's clickbait. It's meant to get you upset. It kicks in your amygdala response. Your reptile brain starts going, oh, I'm in danger. I better pay attention.
The panic, yeah.
It's rubbish. We've got to stop falling for this stuff. I bump into people daily who are complaining about life. And I posted a thing on my Facebook this week about how if you complain all the time, you start building circuits in your brain that reinforce that stuff. And you start going into a negative spiral. This is biological. It's not psychological. This is your brain builds machines inside of it to deal with your negativity. And it reinforces itself. If you're looking for bad stories, you will find them everywhere. If you're looking for good, you'll find it everywhere. And yeah. I'm not saying put your head in the sand. There's obviously a lot of realistic problems and some very serious global challenges we have. And a lot of them are ecological and a lot of them are economic. But the fact is, the world is getting better, not worse. It's less conflict-fueled than it's ever been. There are fewer people in the world are likely to die a violent death than ever before. That should make you happy.
And you see, and spiritually, by the way, just for the other half of the audience, is that you manifest your reality. So if you're going to look for the negative, you're going to create the negative. It will come around you.
I think that we're discovering day by day just how powerful our minds are and how much we're able to direct the course of things by being a little more conscious. And this isn't some woo-woo thing. This has been proven to be the way that successful people and unsuccessful people operate. Mm-hmm. If you live in a miserable, negative, complaining reality, then that's going to be the reality that you have in the practical world. And if you live in a world where you're full of hope and optimism and you've got ways of dealing with conflict and danger and disaster, because those things are going to happen. We're not living in a cloud cuckoo land. Bad things are going to happen to you. You're going to have health problems. You're going to have relationship problems. You're going to have money problems. You're going to have job problems.
You're going to have bitch problems.
99 problems and a bitch can be one.
Yeah.
The fact is, you've got to have a way to deal with this stuff. And if you deal with it negatively, you're going to have negative consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with it positively, you may just be able to come out alive. All right.
Yeah.
I just needed to throw that in there because there's all of this propaganda out there about how bad the world is and how dangerous it is and how unequal it is and it's worse than it's ever been and the Gini coefficient and nonsense. Everybody calm down.
And can I add something to that? You, Gareth, I think the world is a better place because there's so much information and you're able to access information and
absolutely
learn. Okay, and that is empowering.
Yeah.
And if you're empowered, you're able to do a hell of a lot of things. I mean, for example, if you've got fiber and you're living in KwaZulu-Natal in a rural area, you can look up what Ndlovu is and learn about an elephant. I know that sounds weird, but you can empower yourself just with education. That's why I loved when you went to Parliament to go and say, listen, we need, if there's one thing this country, I think, needs, is
cheaper data.
Because it's a way of accessing information. If you don't know what something is, you can go and look it up, what a sore is.
Well, the big story this week, tomorrow, is...
Dan's birthday.
National Tequila Day. in the US, but we're claiming it.
Oh, yeah. Very excitable, Alan.
So
I love tequila.
I know Gareth loves tequila.
It's all I drink.
It's all you drink, right? That's right. Do you know about all the different types of tequila there are?
Sure. Tell us. Oh, I'd love to know.
There are basically three.
I mean,
there are lots of brands, but there are basically three.
Yes.
There's Blanco.
Yeah.
Reposado.
Yes.
And Añejo.
Oh my goodness me, you're 100% right.
I know everything about tequila.
Blanco tequila, Reposado tequila, and Añejo tequila.
You want to know what they are? Blanco is white, obviously. It means
silver or white.
It's silver. It has come straight off the still.
Yes.
Straight off the distillation process.
It tastes disgusting.
No one ever drinks white tequila or silver tequila. It's disgusting.
Even
Mexicans look at you funny when you say you like it. Then there's reposado, which means to lie down. It means it's been aged in a barrel for up to 2 years.
2 to 11 months. So, yeah.
Up to two years. What's wrong with you?
I thought it said years.
Listen to me. I know this stuff. This is all I know. This is all I'm good for.
Yes.
Reposado is the gold variety. Most of the ones we get in this country are reposado, and they are slightly smoother. Most people drink them as shots, but you can drink them in other ways too. And then there's Añejo. Añejo means old. Mm-hmm. Añejo has been aged in an oak barrel.
Tequila.
And it's smooth. And you drink it like whiskey. And it doesn't burn. And it's pure.
Oh, I feel like a tequila.
All of this is made out of the agave plant, which is not a cactus. It's actually a member of the lily family. Is there anything I left out, Leanne?
Jeez. Just love that.
You basically recited this entire article.
And I don't have the article in front of me. Just vouch for me,
exactly.
Please.
So you've got the three, the Blanco, straight out of the distilling place.
Yes. Have you had some tequila this morning?
Distillation process. Yes. Okay. Reposado, deeper, more complex, softer, smoother, 2 to 11 months in oak barrels. Pair it with meat, fruit, and spicy foods. Añejo, extra aged in barrels, less than 600 liters. Smooth.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, it's exactly what you said. And then, as a rule of thumb, look for tequila bottles labeled 100% blue agave. With that certification, you'll be sure the tequila was distilled entirely from the plant and is not mixed with other ingredients like sugar cane.
Yeah.
Then have you heard of something called mezcal?
Mezcal.
Mm-hmm. It's also an agave spirit, but the origins and cooking process differs from those of tequila. It can be made with a variety of species of agave, not just blue agave.
Do you know who taught me about tequila? Jesus Hernandez.
Well, with a name like that, I would have believed every word he said.
He was the chief distiller at Olmecas Tezon factory. He knew all about this stuff, taught me how to drink it properly, everything. And you know why tequila always comes in a square bottle?
I don't know.
So it doesn't roll away?
Yes.
When you're drunk?
Really? That's so cool. Okay, yeah.
Just the mere mention of tequila makes you want to belch a little.
I feel queasy. I got horny. I got excited.
Alan. What?
Suddenly, that's killed the vibe.
Quickly turn off the music.
No, I didn't mean it. I mean, I feel grrr. You know?
We'll get very serious for a minute.
And we'll be back after this break.
Sorry, guys.
Gee, that's really amazing. Well done, Gareth. I'm very impressed.
Is there anything I left out?
I'll tell you what.
One of the reasons, and I could be funny about tequila the whole time, but the reason I like drinking it is, first of all, I've developed a huge resistance to it. So I can handle a lot more shots than the average person, and I don't get a terrible hangover as long as I don't mix stuff with it. The other thing is that it's an upper. All alcohol is a mood suppressant. It makes you melancholy and a little bit softer and a little bit more woo-woo, but tequila makes you a little bit more yay!
Mm. Yeah, so tequila and champagne.
And cane.
Yeah, champagne and tequila are the only two uppers.
Well, cane makes you fisty, doesn't it?
Cane.
Gives you fisticuffs.
No, that's brandy.
Froslan and Coke.
Oh no.
But tequila is good.
I don't drink anything else, and I've tried, but other stuff just doesn't have the same effect.
So tomorrow you've got that big event happening. With all the DJs and well, yes, the radio people. Yes. We should have a tequila tasting afterwards.
You just calm yourself down. Oh,
please no.
After the podcast.
It's, you know, a school night.
I don't like to drink during the week, huh?
I agree.
Don't do it anymore. I've become boring, and I don't want to talk about this because otherwise people are going to say, oh, look how boring you are. I don't do it anymore. It's just too much pain and torment. And I want to sleep properly. I want to wake up feeling fresh the next day. Not good during the week. All right, enough about that. Let's get into some serious stuff. So Tequila Day is tomorrow in the U.S.
Yes. And if you want to counteract the effects of too much tequila, we can talk vitamins. Because a new study has shown that most vitamins, and we knew this, may be a waste of money, but two are the exception.
Which ones?
And specifically a combination. So in terms of decreasing risk of stroke, a combination of folic acid and omega-3 fatty acid supplements works. However, there is a popular vitamin and mineral combination that's linked to an increase in stroke risk. And those are a vitamin D and calcium combo. Mm. Now, vitamin D, you can get it off the shelves, but it's absolutely useless off the shelves. You need to have a prescription.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I actually take one once a week.
And look how healthy you are.
And I'm the picture. The picture of health.
Sorry, what was that, Leanne?
So, and that, if you're taking with calcium, is associated with a slight uptick in stroke risk. Huh. So you can't just willy-nilly go to pharmacies and just have vitamins and minerals.
But you're a woman, so you've got to be careful your calcium intake, you know, because they say...
Why, Dr. Ford?
Osteoporosis.
It also runs in the family.
Leanne, stop it.
That's me trying to take my tablets in the morning. I have a gag reflex.
All right. Please keep tequila away from Alan Ford.
Who says that?
That is from Katula.
What Katula?
And then, Gareth, have you been to the new Mexican place in Menland, Maine? Huge tequila menu.
Mm.
Oh, there's a lot of places that have a big tequila menu now.
There's a place in Santon that I recently went to with a group of friends where if you order a certain number of tequila shots, they tell you a percentage will be donated to various charities. So now I'm like, you're twisting our arms to drink more?
They clearly don't know their audience because tequila... drinkers aren't interested in helping a charity. Which is the last thing on their mind.
That's how we were roped into it. They're like, no, you know what, guys? If all of us have a shot, we'll buy five and 20 rand. We'll go to this orphanage. Let's go. More tequila.
Kurt Skunrat's going to join us in a short while. He's a comedian, and we're going to talk about his Big Five comedy show that's at Monty this weekend, featuring... let me see. Who's
very exciting.
There's Skulk Poseidonote, there's Tats and Gonzo, there's John Flismus, and Kurt. And so I can't believe we haven't had him on the show before. This is ridiculous.
Mm.
Obviously, we've been missing out. And Stuart Taylor, of course, is heading up the Big Five comedy show. Mm. Three-city national tour taking place in Joburg, Durban, and Cape Town. We'll find out more about that with Kurt in a short while and also talk to him about what else is going on in his life and all kinds of interesting stories. What's in the news, ass?
Oh, gosh. This is a creepy story.
Uh-oh.
Remains found behind a grocery store cooler in the U.S., and it's not Florida.
Leanne, yesterday you were talking about skulls, and today it's still remains.
This could be
remains of a rat or something.
No, they were the remains of a worker who'd been missing for 10 years. Can you believe it?
No one knew...
Here's
the weird thing about these people who they suddenly find behind a freezer. The family don't go, dad's been missing for 6 weeks. Report it to the police. Someone tell somebody.
No, let's shame. To be fair, his parents told police that his name is Larry Murillo Moncada.
Oh, my God.
That he'd been acting irrationally, possibly because of medication, and then he disappeared.
So did he, what, go and hide behind the fridge?
Leanne, don't you clean behind your fridge after 10 years? What's wrong with in a restaurant? A grocery store? I mean, really?
It was the former No Frills supermarket.
I'm never shopping there anymore.
No,
in Council Bluffs, Iowa. So they were cleaning it out and they found a man behind. He'd been missing since November the 28th, 2009. Investigators used his parents' DNA to confirm the identity. And the clothes matched the description of his attire as at the time that he was reported missing. So he apparently became upset at home with his parents and he ran out of the home.
Did he electrocute himself? What happened behind the?
Well, no one knows because he disappeared and then he was pitched up behind
the
fridge.
But what did he die of? Behind the
The cold.
What to say? It's the most ridiculous
story. Okay. It's thought that he may have fallen into an 18-inch gap.
Oh, no.
Between the back of the cooler and a wall where he became trapped. And apparently the noise from the cooler's compressors may have concealed any attempts to call for help.
I don't mean to be crass, but how do you also not notice the stench?
Yeah. Exactly.
10 years.
Or you're like, oh, that must be some off beef in the fridge.
I mean, he would have started smelling now that I know
him. I think we may have a dead body somewhere in there. You know, in that pod, that room at the end.
It's like, oh, that's like.
We've got this room. We built in the first year we moved in. We built what we call our little pod. It's basically a 2-people soundproof booth where you could do a one-on-one interview with someone. For example, you could record something for a show. And it's nice and soundproofed, and it's kind of off to the one side for a long time. And I think you could still maybe pick up a hint of that smell. It smelt like something had died. You know, there's a different smell between, like if there's a turd lying somewhere or something, that's got a smell to it. But that goes away quite quickly because a turd dries out. A human body or a body of an animal, like maybe it was a dove that got caught in the air vent or I don't know what it was. Yeah, there's a smell about something dead that you can't get out of.
It's fell. It's terrible. They have to put. Did you see it in the movies? That thing under their nose. That's how bad. I mean, that's literally. Cops
it's
come
instant
out of vomit.
Material. It's,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's how bad it is.
We've had so many interns. Maybe there was one intern who got lost in the building.
If anyone's missing an intern,
fell into a crack somewhere.
If your family member came here to work for us once,
might lost in the
I mean, it's now been 4 years since we opened that room up. We still use it from time to time, but at one point it was very tough to work in there. Nobody really.
It is next to the ladies' toilet.
And look what happens with no frills. Grocery store.
I think we must check the roof. Maybe there's something.
Coming back to you just quickly, tequila and this man clearly sounds like a Mexican person or a Spanish person.
Don't be racist.
Go back to Mexico.
Have you seen Queen of the South on Netflix?
No.
Please watch it.
What is it?
I've heard of it.
It is brilliant. It's about the drug cartels. But they drink so much tequila in it, and it's really cool. Please, Mrs. Mendoza, you're going to... Oh, she's one of the fiercest women.
Mrs. Mendoza.
You'll love it. Yeah. You've got to watch it. Listen to me, Gareth. You've got to watch
What's
it.
What's it called?
Queen of the South.
Queen of the South.
It is the best. Seriously.
What doesn't Galagata have to do with anything?
Ruth says, sorry, tequila and I just aren't friends anymore. We once got too passionate with each other, and it didn't end well.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's happened. Oh, this is terrible news. Ramita says, more bad news in the music industry. Kurt Darren was found alive in his bathroom this morning.
Oh, my God.
No, that's sad. That's sad. Kurt is actually, you know, he's a decent guy. I'm not
I know. But no. I dig Kurt. He's a cool guy.
I've actually seen Queen of the South.
Can we just move on from that one, please? I'm not paying any more attention. It seems like the happiest place on earth might also be the most surveilled on earth.
What's
Here's that? A story coming from Disneyland and the Disney World chain. They are the latest company to be spotted as a company that is misusing customer data.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
Disney. Mm-hmm. Who can you trust?
Disneyland and Disney World. So if you go into one of these resorts, and especially for families who are touring the resorts with kids, the park offers you what they call magic bands, and sometimes they'll even strongly encourage you to download one of their apps, you know, for you to... They say, oh, no, you can track times for shows, you can figure out maps and where to go.
Mm-hmm.
But now it has been revealed that they actually use these magic bands and these apps.
You know, magic to steal your ID.
To collect data on their customers. So we don't know to what extent they've been using this star to fall, but people have been looking at how much money the resorts have been making just last year alone.
When we steal your ID, we will put it in our database. We will use it for remarketing and screw up your life.
That's right. I don't have a problem with people stealing my data. I really don't.
Times have been tough.
What are they going to find out that I liked the movie on the shark and that I liked going on the up and down ride?
So
and that I bought popcorn at 2 o'clock.
They don't care.
I don't care.
It sounds pretty similar to what their justification currently is. They're fully owning up to the fact that they've been tracking consumer data through these magic bands, but they're saying it's part of a new virtual reservation system that they've been rolling out. They're saying that through collecting the data, for example, with the magic band system, they've brought down transaction times by 30%. They've been able to make sure that people don't stand in line for as long as possible. You know, they fast track your experience within the resort. So it's actually about, they say, keeping the parks running with extreme efficiency.
And they know that they're actually selling 30 popcorns a day, not 20, so they can keep it going and you don't have to stand in queues. Those parks, you can stand in queues for hours to go for one ride.
I think, you know, that you say that Disney's the happiest place on earth. I saw that one of Walt Disney's granddaughters, I think, who's the head of the Disney family now, she was saying that she thinks it's actually not living up to its reputation as being the happiest place on earth because a lot of the staff are very unhappy.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot of stuff that's going on, you know, from the point of view of like hygiene and sure. and a happy workplace and all the rest. It's not true. To me Disney World or Disneyland is the opposite of happiness. Bunch of screaming children and
I'm not interested
fat
in going.
People and and dry. I just
love it.
Oh, I would.
Yes, I loved it.
I loved it.
Absolutely hate people.
I don't know about the screaming children, but I loved. I mean, I saw Disney on Ice just now, this past season 3 times. Loved it. Love it.
Oh my goodness,
crap,
no, guys.
All the food, all the nonsense. I love seeing up where they walk. And I'm very, very dramatic. I love Disney. I'm a Disney freak. But some of the shows
in your eyes.
But I've got to tell you,
have you been to see the new Lion King?
I haven't seen it yet, but I watched Dumbo and I cried my eyes out in Dumbo. A lot of those movies are very sad.
Yeah, I battle through some of them.
Bambi is I have never watched. I watched Bambi when I was 5. I can't watch it again. I've never watched it again.
It's traumatized you.
I'm traumatized. I'm a vegetarian. I mean, not because of Bambi, but I'm just saying. I mean, pescatarian. But it's sad stuff.
No, I think
and some great stuff as well, but I mean, it's sad. I mean, Mufasa dies.
I think this grand...
You only figured that out now?
No, but I'm just saying, it's sad.
I think this granddaughter or great-granddaughter of Walt Disney is saying this because maybe she's now been cut out of the business deal since Disney's so commercialized now and has been sold to the highest bidder. That's why.
Yeah, look, I don't know. But to me, Disney would be the opposite of happy. And for some people, it's the greatest place in the world. I think if you have kids, it is the greatest place in the world because they really have figured out exactly how to amuse children for the longest possible time and at the best prices and to keep the parents from boiling over and losing their minds.
I don't know why I think of sticky hands, urine-soaked nappies, screaming children, bees. That's what I think of.
I'd actually argue because Disney has been
I'm seeing what you're seeing
so associated with all of our lives. You feel like you are so in that world, you lose it. You leave there on a sugar high. You are wearing those Mickey Mouse ears. You are high-fiving people you don't know. It is beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And now they're tracking your data.
And coming back to The Lion King, we'll have John Carney on the show next week.
On your show?
Yeah, because John will get him on the line because he plays the voice of the monkey.
Rafiki,
yeah.
Talk about your show, Ellen.
Oh, what's happening this week?
Yeah, your new show.
We're opening the spotlight this week. Yes, I forgot there's a new show starting.
I had to help.
I'm so excited. We've got Nicole Kappa.
A Is it going to be a great show?
Great show. Always great. Yeah. I've got Josh Enzi. We're going to be singing in the studio. I've got the two stars of Aspusterki. They're coming in.
I beg your pardon?
Aspusterki. Okay, which means Cinderella. And we're going to be singing in studio. We've got Nicole Kepper, our former Miss South Africa. She's in Survivor. Mm-hmm. She's just launched a magazine. We're going to chat to Stuart Taylor, also about the Comedy Big Five show happening. And yeah, we're going to talk some nice food with
so, what's your new show called, Alan?
It's called Spotlight.
There we go.
Unview the Thin, the Rich, and the Fabulous is
when
over.
Is it on?
We're retiring that.
We're retiring. It starts at 9 o'clock this morning. There we go. 9 o'clock. Ah. And a great lineup, which is really, really cool.
Where can you get the podcast?
At the one and only cliffcentral.com.
She's so all corny.
Right. No, I'm a cheese ball. I love it.
A message for you from Tato, who says, Alan, watch Finding Nemo and you'll stop eating fish.
Fish are friends, not food.
I do want to say something interesting about that word. Have you been to Durban? Have you seen how they say that word? They go, fish, fish, fish. Yeah. It's, yeah. And popcorn. Popcorn and fish.
Popcorn.
And the leaves from the south go, thati. Thati rand.
How the libs? How the libs doing?
They're good.
What's happening with the libs?
I don't know. A lot were at James Small's funeral. A lot were going to be at Marsh Bachelor's funeral.
Yeah.
You think this is funny? That all the libs are going to Marsh Bachelor's funeral?
None of them were Johnny Clegg's funeral, but they were the Jews. But that's. I'm sorry.
Alan, what's the story with this place? You did some research.
Well, I was just intrigued.
No, hold on. Let me tell the story and then you tell yours. Alan heard that James Small died in a sex club, and his first response wasn't, oh my God, that's terrible, poor James Small and poor James Small's family. His first thing was, why have I not heard of this sex club before?
Obviously, I know James. Secondly, I knew about, before it came out in report, I'd known that he actually was, he was found coming from a place like that. I never
who told you?
Anyone. We'd heard via the media.
Okay.
And so I was just so intrigued to go and so in the middle of the office, everyone around me, I thought, like, I really want to go and look what this harem is. Mm. Firstly, don't get confused. View, there is a club called Harem in Rosebank, which is like Buddha Bar. So it's not that place. They weren't there, okay? Because really, I saw some well-known personalities on that website. Okay.
And you thought, oh, those people also go to the sex club.
I thought, when I saw Bonang, I thought, you've got to be careful. That's not... But... Then I looked at this other one in Bedford View, and I've got it. Firstly, the opening page is this Indian looking a cartoon character. And then you must see all the services they offer.
Tell me, give me the menu.
Okay, so firstly, they obviously offer dates, escorts, ladies. This is a straight place. All right. They offer lesbian shows.
Okay.
Lots of lesbian shows. They offer bachelor party, divorce parties. They offer.
I'm so glad someone's catering for divorces.
They've got a buffet.
Weddings get all the budget these days.
And a bar.
No, there's like a woman in a burqa.
No, that's not the harem. You got the wrong one.
Is that the wrong one?
No, that's the one that's the nightclub. Go harem, sex club. I didn't know what a sex club was. I'd never heard of a sex. I mean, I'm worldly. But it's been a sex club.
So what do you learn here?
So I don't know what. So there's a bar and there's a buffet. So if I had to go, I'd go for the bar and the buffet. I'm definitely not going for the lesbians.
Okay, but hang on. Is the buffet the range of options?
No, buffet is a food buffet.
Oh.
There's a U-Porn link and I'm not opening it. Jav Swingers Club Harem Sex Party for new member.
Oh, they got that. So James was there.
They make a big
fuss
for.
But the lady said, that the owner of the place, or let's call it the madam, whatever you want the word is, said that he was just sitting at the bar, naked.
No, the reports are saying he was not naked.
Okay, but Leanne, you've been to swingers clubs.
Yes.
Those you go in naked.
No.
Oh. Tell me what happens.
No, you go in with your clothes on, and eventually they come off.
I was at John Burke's Swingers Club.
You don't stand with at Rick the door Emden. Naked.
I was in shock. I did a whole thing on the nudist place as well once. Can I just say, the people that go to these places, none of them are hot.
No.
They're not hot people.
No, they're
not. Old and they're fat and they've got little winkies. I mean, it's just the whole thing was. I went to a nudist colony and I was just, no disrespect to them, but they were just.
You ever been to a nude beach?
No, I did a whole feature on Fladdering on this.
Of course you did.
On a news place, and it's just weird. I mean, I know that you at the age of 60, you like your body. I mean, the one lady had a mastectomy, so she was proud of the fact that she'd lost the breast, which is good. But it's just, there was nothing hot about it.
No, I didn't meet anyone.
But again, a nudist colony has got nothing to do with sex.
No, I know.
It's just about naturalism. And
but know, it's kind of revolting. I'm sorry, it's just not everybody's seen. So Kurt is with us, Kurt Skoenraad. He is a comedian. You've obviously seen and heard of Kurt. We have, but I can't believe you haven't been on the show before.
And neither can I.
It's revolting, I'm indeed. Sorry. I apologize.
I'll let it slide just this once, Kurt.
You've been to a nude colony or any of these things?
I have. Maybe I should contextualize a little bit. I'm married to a German, right?
Oh, they love
that. Oh, they've got this thing called free body culture. So picture the scene, right? My first experience with this was in Berlin. I'm holding my goose's hand. They're cruising through the park. Now, a park, I'm talking of the dog walking, frisbee tossing variety park. Nothing special, just a park. Thank God I've got the sunglasses on, right? So I'm holding my goose's hand and we're cruising down there. And I clap, something's wrong, yeah? but the penny doesn't drop just yet. I'm still what can only be described as chameleoning around the room.
What's happening? But you're outside.
I'm outside. It's a park. Picture like a garden park, the kind of thing you go take wedding photographs in. You know, there's families and frisbees and dogs and stuff. Yeah. And I spotted something's wrong, but I couldn't pick it up just yet. It took me another 30 seconds. And then I realized that most of the women in the space in this park were not wearing any tops.
Big German titten all over the place.
Oh, they're good titten all over the place. Now, of course. Now, I'm like I said, taking all of this imaging in to be gone through later on in private, of course. And... But I've got sunglasses on and it protects me from the embarrassment right now because I'm South African and we don't even talk about sex in my family. No. You know, when there's two people pumping on screen, my parents are in the room, I'm like, coffee anyone? You coffee tea? For you?
Yeah.
It's the uncomfortable vibe that, you know.
Well, like my mum would say, have you done your homework?
Yeah, that at the age of 40, that's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, it was 26 for me, but, you know, not as embarrassing. You know, this is just it. And it's... Us South Africans are quite conservative when it comes to that kind of exhibitionism, you know. Mm. When some of them not even they don't even consider it exhibitionism at all. They just consider it normal. Now, it's being naked is one thing, but when you find people naked doing weird things or just normal things, I don't know if you've seen that.
Like if they're hanging up the washing.
Like riding your scooter on the N2. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of, you know, especially if you're over 40, there's all kinds of wobbly bits in the air there. And it's like, you know, at least he had his visor down, for crying out loud.
No, but it's true. I mean, I look at Portugal. We used to have a place in the Algarve there. And we were on the beach the once. My brother was about 5 or 6. And a nursery school teacher pitched up. They were having a day at the beach with the class. Mm-hmm. And they were all the kids were standing in a circle. She was throwing a ball to each one and they were throwing it back. And she was topless.
Beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
And my brother was standing outside the circle just with his mouth wide open. This is just staring.
It's the nonchalantness of it all. You know, that affects me.
But the Germans love this stuff. I remember we drove past a park in Berlin last year, I think. I was with Pumi and Greg. You go past and you see these people just lying around on the grass and they've got nothing on. They just don't care.
They don't even
Germans.
They don't crack a smile, they don't crack a nod, not even an eye, like an eyebrow.
To them it's normal.
No, dead normal. Like riding a bicycle in a nudist park is like quite a normal thing, right? Mm. The oak's cruising up and down and there's something about pedal motion that makes it's just weird. I'm sorry.
Coming back to Leanne's story, vitamin D.
Yes,
in Germany,
the sun.
They need that sun.
Yeah.
But it's just topless and they're not bottomless.
No, you know, it depends where in Germany
they
is.
I'm just saying they just took their top off because they felt like if I was a guy jogging through Emmerenche Dam Park. I just took my top off and I put it like my vest off.
Okay. Exactly.
That's the vibe.
Well, you see, this is just it. It's the equalness of the genders
jogging,
over there.
I just want to point out that if Alan was jogging and he took his top off and put it around his waist, his tits would knock him out.
I've had the job done.
Still about a D cup there.
Yeah, I know that.
Substantial, Alan.
It's after 15 years, you put in a few pounds.
So, Kurt, very nice to see you. You're doing this big show at Monty. You're doing it three cities, right?
Indeed, yeah. Okay. Cape Town, Durban, and Joburg, yeah.
So what do you think of the other guys who are on this lineup with you? I mean, do you like them?
Bunch of wankers.
Hello, Stuart's
my favorite wankers, though. My favorite wankers. Like, Stuart and myself go back years and years. We were like housemates for like 5 years in a good Christian way. I need to point out. We both had girlfriends and stuff.
No, but, Stuart, you and Stuart Taylor have been doing this. You kind of walked a similar path, the two of you together, right? You've both been in comedy for a long time. And
truth be told, we must probably help each other's careers along. Yeah. You know, we lived together because we couldn't afford to drive home after the shows.
Listen, everybody thinks comedy is so glamorous, and there are a lot of people who are making money out of it now. But in the beginning, when you're starting off as a comedian, it's hard as hell.
Yep.
You have to keep working on your material. You fail a couple of times. You don't get paid properly for these gigs. It basically doesn't even cover your cost of petrol most of the time.
Indeed.
And now, and people want to go into this as a career. Are they insane?
Well, this is just it. You know, it's, if you're going into it for the bucks, then it's clearly not a good move.
Yeah.
If you're going into it because you're just really smart what it is and how it makes people feel when you
I
do
mean,
it.
I mean, thank God your wife, your German wife, Angela Merkel, she, she's got a proper job so that she can support you. You know?
No, she doesn't. She's a television producer, for crying out loud. You know? So we
wow, that's a proper job. What are you talking about?
You guys could start the support group, Marcus and yourself. No, I'm just teasing.
I agree. She's,
so we both have kind of the... And thank God for it. She had a 9 to 5 straight down the line, garden variety type of job, we wouldn't be together. I think, you know, there's just too much going on in that kind of thing.
I did an interview with Jason Goliath last week, and I went to his house. He doesn't allow people often to come into his home, and there on the wall is a 100 rand note that's been framed. I said, "What's the 100 rand note?" He said, one of his first gigs, the guy just felt like sorry for him. He's like, "Here's $100 for petrol," and he kept that. He did such a great gig.
All of us have some kind of.
And the 100 rand was in an envelope. Look here,
with your name.
That's your S&T.
Yeah, S&T. I mean, your per diem, as it were, which is actually.
He didn't get paid for the gig, but they gave him 100 rand. Like, I feel sorry, shame. For
yeah, it does have that Achistuch vibe to it, does it not?
For your toll.
And you know, just to start off with, when I started comedy, there was 10 comedians in the whole country.
Yeah.
They were all on my contact list, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to, Stuart and myself, we'd show up at a gig, set up the sound, do the sound check. Then when the audience showed up, did the show, back everything back up, put it in the car and head back out tomorrow night, do the same thing over and over. The thing was, there just wasn't anyone else to do it at the time. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you've done some TV stuff since then, quite a lot of it. You did Going Nowhere Slowly. You've done that Who Do You Think You Are, which was on BBC. Comedy Central, you actually did that, your own special
indeed
on Comedy Central. What was that like? Because that's a tough thing to wrestle. I mean, you've got to make sure that this is something that it's going to go on TV.
Yes.
People are going to see it over and over again. It's indeed like a record.
And you just reminded me of one of the biggest faux pas I ever had was on that show. I was introducing one of the younger acts on the lineup, and I introduced him as a Cape Town act that has a very similar name.
Uh-oh.
So it's Dylan Olifant and Dalen Oliver, and I got the two.
Oh my god!
So I introduced the wrong O on the show. So every time I spot
have
that special, every time Dylan Olifant sees me, he doesn't even say anything. He just throws his hands up. He's just like, I've earned that too, you know. So I feel horrible every time I see him. So no, that hasn't. The show itself was fantastic for me because I'd chosen a very specific bunch of material that I was going to shelf anyways. It had seen its enough life on stage, and all comedians' material has that kind of evolution.
There's a lifespan. Yeah.
Indeed. Well, with the exception of one or two of us, like Dave Levinson, for example, who operates off the scale completely.
But he's also got no new material.
Dave Levinson will sit on that stage and tell you how he went for his dental appointment this morning and keep an audience in stitches. I need to write stuff, you know. I need to be a little more. I do
well,
keep a little.
You know how Dave got that skill? He would repeatedly ram his head into a brick wall until eventually new ideas came. That's his way.
Sometimes, you know, I've seen Dave on form is arguably one of the hardest acts to follow, you know.
Really? Okay, well, credit to Dave. I mean, maybe we've been mean to him for so long.
I think you might have given him a little bit of a short stick there, I'll tell you what. Because, I mean, we did a tour together about 2 years ago. Rob van Vuren.
I gave him
Dave.
I gave him $100 the other day.
In an envelope with his name. So we were off to Australia about 2 years ago for the Perth Fringe Festival out there.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was times like that you could see Dave Levin's pedigree, you know. He wasn't disturbed at all by the different culture, by the approach, by the language. By, and, you know, they don't speak English for the
and
record.
He did well?
Exceptionally well.
Yeah, he killed it. Yeah,
he killed it, yeah.
You know, I think there's something that people like me and people who watch guys like you doing your thing, and it's an incredible, I've always had the best and the most genuine respect for comedians. It's the hardest of all the performing arts to do, but there's an even harder part to that when you're doing a comedy special on TV, because now this stuff gets picked apart by an audience that don't normally go to clubs.
Yeah.
You know, if you're performing for an audience that's opted in to a club, they come there, they, you know, you'd assume that I'm here to have a good time, I'm here to laugh, I'm in a good mood. I mean, there are occasionally curmudgeonly people, but a TV audience is a different thing. And they're going to pick it apart and they're going to say, well, that's not so funny, or this, and it stays on the record forever. Unlike a gig, if you do a comedy gig and like one or two of your jokes don't fall on the right ears, and maybe people don't love it so much, you just move on.
Well,
not
it depends. You know,
did you feel extra pressure?
Of course I do. I'm less now than I used to, you know. It's, I mean, I've been doing this for about 20 years now, so and it doesn't mean that it comes with a certain arrogance, but it does come with a sense of confidence in what it is that I'm doing. And so I'm more of the, hey, man, I'm not going to be able to please everybody out there all the time. So I'll go out there, I'll feel it out the best way I can, I'll do my best job, and whatever crit comes after that, some of it might be constructive, you know. I'm like, that might be similar to a piece of material you wrote 5 years ago, Kurt.
Right.
I go, oh, okay, fair enough. There might have been a bit of influence there, but at the end of the day, you know, this career choice is a constantly evolving exercise. You're constantly changing what I'm doing all the time. In fact, whatever.
Well, I mean, you've done some very different stuff. I mean, you were in Scheme as the lead.
Yes.
Which is,
oh, I mean, that was killer, man.
Wow. Fun, right?
The most fun I've ever had in my life, bro.
Really?
Just unbelievable. Look at the cast. It was unbelievable. Everybody on that cast literally worked for free. Unbelievable.
I think that is unbelievable. I would like to make a movie where everyone's going to work for free.
And I make the profit.
Well, if you consider just how expensive it is to get of these big names out on one cast. We were staying at the Gariep Dam for a month on set, right? Sure. And likes of Kenneth Nkosi, Rapalana, David Isaacs, Keenan Arison. These are, and what was absolutely rad about it, it wasn't a Joburg or a Cape Town thing at all.
Yeah.
It was a collaborative effort of, and Tim Green at the time, director, writer, in his opinion, he said, I'd chosen the best people I could for the role. I didn't give a flying toss where they were from or which demographic they filled. I was getting the best people I could to do these roles. And you know, before then, I've done one or two acting roles before then, and I told him, hey, bro, I hope you know that I'm not an actor. I talk cock for a living. Do you know that? He goes, well, I tell you what you do, I do what I do, and we'll be fine.
I think you are. I mean, you've first of all got one of the most expressive faces, and you're one of those people who you don't overact.
Oh, that's very important. That, you know, that is one of the things that I'm most afraid of, is hamming it up to the extent where you're not buying the product anymore. No. In fact, this is why Tim is such a fantastic director.
Yeah.
It's because he's a fantastic actor himself.
But how did Scheme do? Because it was a good movie. It was well acclaimed. People
did very well as far as local movies do.
Yeah.
And then about 2 years ago, which is about 5 years after we shot the movie, I think it was Rwandan director loved the movie so much that he copied it verbatim. Even the improv scenes we were doing, improv scenes where Tim was going, Kurt,
so
just
did
go,
you sue his pants off?
Well, in fact, it's probably the greatest compliment in the world ever, you know.
Tim didn't.
What he did was he just gave the movie the second breath it needed, you know, and got a whole new set of attention. And then I think it was very well accepted outside of South Africa. It won Viewer's Choice at more than one festival. So it was clearly well accepted. It was, it is, in my opinion, it's very left field for a South African movie. It was, I'll be criticized for this somewhere along the line, but I think it was ahead of its time almost.
Sure.
And so much so that I don't think it was gotten by a lot of people. What I do know now, though, is like almost 10 years after the movie was shot, now being used at, like, AFTA, for example, as an example of a South African piece that can be analyzed. What happened there? Why it was done?
Like a set work.
Exactly. It's a set work piece. It's become almost it's gotten a bit of underground status to it now. Wow. And I'm really chuffed with that.
Yeah, sure.
I don't mind playing a lead in an underground movie like that.
No, that's amazing.
So well,
I mean, those are the kind of things that build reputation.
Indeed.
The other thing that you were brave enough to do is to create a comedy venue
in
Cape Town. And that's hard as hell. People don't understand. Because
that is, dude.
Running a venue is very different to just being the talent.
Yeah. Well, most people don't know this, but I've always been a businessman. I've had a courier business before. I've had a T-shirt business before that. So there was always a business.
You run
sense
that
to
club
it.
Where James Small died as well once.
But you know, James, good lad over there. And I don't want to add
loyal
too
customer.
Much, insult to injury over no, there. But yeah, it's a little compromising, I'm afraid. Yeah. But comedy is hard, bro.
So tell me about running a venue, because it's really you, the Goliaths, and
Parkers.
And Parkers. Yeah. Those are the only three, right, that have ever.
Well, what most people don't know is that my venue was rated one of the top 10 places or comedy venues in the world about a year ago.
Amazing.
I never.
What's it called?
The Cape Town Comedy Club.
Really? Where
just
is
like it was called your Master Comedy Club, and it was
really?
It was functioning really? Like as an underground space.
I haven't been there, so I really.
And then we changed the name to the Cape Town Comedy Club once we started in a new like mainstream space. It just wasn't accepted the same way, and ever since then, people have just accepted it beautifully. It's a very, very difficult thing to do, run a comedy club in there. As popular as the art form is, I don't think we've got enough momentum to make something work on a larger, like, franchised type scale. You know, the theatre's a weird thing that way. It's got to be built into your history or your culture almost a little bit. So for us to take stand-up comedy and putting it into digestible forms for people to consume on a commercial level, we found huge problems with that, or challenges with that, especially with the economy taking a bit of a down slump.
Yeah.
The first thing to vie off the list of priorities is the entertainment, or what is considered the luxury commodities, you know. So when people aren't paying like school fees and bonds, it's a little hard to get them to a comedy venue.
So they're not only paying for stuff that they have to pay for instead of the stuff they want to pay for, but they're also getting miserable because they don't have any comedy in their lives.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a true story that comedy is therapy, bro. It's like,
of course it is.
Two meters of bubble wrap on someone's couch, maybe.
You know? Don't you think that the worse people's lives are, the more
they need it,
and the better the comedy gets?
Oh yes, of course. You know, comedy and adversity is mutually inclusive. You know, you need something that pisses people off for them to laugh at, almost. You know,
mm-hmm. That's great.
It's the true story. Oh, yeah, this is the hardest thing about running a venue, is that no matter how you see it.
Did you do food as well?
Yes, we do food.
Oy, oy, oy.
That is the hardest part of it. Oh. Food and beverage. I've become, by default, a restaurateur about 6 years ago when I opened it. And that has been the biggest challenge for me. Biggest.
I mean, people, they think that when you're preparing their food that you're their servant.
If I'd go one step further than that. I believe that they believe you owe them some part of your soul once you've produced food for them and they're paying for it, you know.
That's why you've never invited Alan Ford before. You knew he would come in there and demand
this, is official.
This and demand that.
I'll extend an invitation there, Alan.
Now, where are you? Where are
you? I'm at the waterfront in the old pump house.
Don't feel
pressurized. Oh, great.
Don't feel pressurized to invite him. He's not even part of the show. We just brought him in this morning.
I've got the entertainment show after this. That's what we...
Cool.
please feel free
to pop in.
She was the rent high there.
Well, it's not only the rent that's the problem.
Did I expect the rent?
It's the turnover clause that's the problem there. You know, it's not only the rent, because whatever you're making, you're going to have to turn over that as well.
Sure.
Well, you know, we've managed to keep it together for about 6 years now.
No, so then it's working.
It's still a challenge, you know.
Who are the up-and-comings that are really...
Oh, there's so many of them.
The ones that we should be looking... I mean, for example, you're right, Dalen Oliver's great.
Dalen's doing well.
Project with him, it was really cool. But who are the up-and-comings? Who are some of the ones we should look out for?
There's so many really good ones out there. And there's a guy called Regan Allen in Cape Town. Tsitsi also works. works Cape Town, Joburg. You might have heard of him before. He's also doing quite well. Then there's like the Carl Webbers and the Yasin Barnes. Yasin Barnes does a one-liner type of approach to the stand-up.
Are some of the old ballers still as good as it? I mean, is Barry Hilton, can he still pull it off?
Man, you know,
I love watching the old guys.
Barry Hilton has evolved in the stand-up business. And if you remember where he started out as, he started out as telling jokes on stage.
Yes, he's grumpy. I love it. I had him in here the other day. The other day. It's like last year or even the year before. Barry is so grumpy. But it's real.
It is.
And as a result, he's hilarious.
And you know, most
the
people
only person
assume
who isn't laughing is him.
Exactly. And he's got that serious face that makes you laugh even more, right? And most people assume that he's just a live wire type of off stage. He's quite a quiet oak.
Very quiet.
Very quiet.
And quite serious about the world. And he's got this kid who's kind of keeping him very young.
Ironically enough, my kid and he's are born days apart, and they're both called Jack. So that's I tease right, him Jack. About it all the time, and he teases me about it. How's your Jack, bro? How's it Jack? Jack.
These guys, I think what Alan's also asking about is people like, I mean, they've just been such amazing characters. And when they come in here sometimes, I go, sure, I'm amazed that they're still doing what they're doing. I mean, comedy's not like athletics where you have to retire after a certain time. And you probably do get better and better and better.
You do. You take someone like Mel Miller, for example.
I was thinking about Mel.
Now, Mel is just, he defies logic. I stand back and I watch him on stage. And his point of referencing is so sharp. He uses like the Chainsmokers as a point of reference for a band. He's in his 70s for crying out loud, you know what I mean? My dad, a lot of my friends don't know who the Chainsmokers are, you know what I mean?
Mel knows.
He's listening to the radio, he's listening to the news, he's reading the newspaper, he's up to date, he's on point, he knows what's going on.
Yeah, he's also a grumpy old bastard though.
Oh, he's even grumpier than Barry is.
And Mark Banks is even grumpy and drunk and all three of
them. Okay, so here's an interesting comment. This is from somebody who's just messaged. Now, talking about being hard to get into stand-up comedy, there's an interesting show on Amazon Prime about a woman who tried to do that in the 50s. It's called The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Apparently, it's very good.
I'd like to check that one out.
Yeah, I'm... Is that not maybe... Because I know there was that comedian, that black comedian called Moms Mabley. What was her name? Moms Mabley.
Yeah.
Whoopi Goldberg did a brilliant documentary about her. She was incredible, like way before her time.
There were many female comedians that were phenomenal and before their times. Unfortunately, you know, as history that spotted their talent was somewhat considered inferior to the male their male counterparts at the time.
They had a tough time.
And I mean, even the male comedians of color had a tough time in the 50s and 60s establishing what comedy was.
Did you in the beginning of your comedy career, were you pigeonholed for being a colored
comedian? Oh man, I hated that.
But did you play up to it?
Well, I tried not to. I tried to make sure the material was as generic as possible, and I didn't use it. No, it's very nice to have a colored people here. I hate that.
That's what I, yeah.
I hate that. I hate that.
Because Mark Lochin plays it brilliantly.
Well, what it is that here is the controversial thing about comedy, is what is your style of comedy? My style, I'd like to believe, is of a more international, generic base. So I've pitched it that way. I could have gone, very nice.
It's a relevance thing.
Exactly. Yeah. But now if you've pitched it at that kind of thing, and I'm not saying it's wrong or right, but it does kind of limit your audience. It builds boundaries around them. Whereas
You're almost like enforcing the stereotype and
Well, also it makes it a lot harder to work outside of South Africa when your point of referencing is all insular. So my idea always was to approach it from quite a generic point of view. Even our own story. Our South African things, to see it from another perspective, from an external perspective, and then give it relevance that way. It's a lot harder to do it from the inside out. You know?
Who was telling me the other day that they hate performing in Durban? They said Durban people just don't have a
Durban
sense of humor.
Durban is shit, man. I'll tell you straight up, not only do they not have a sense of humor, they just don't show up.
And you couldn't drink or drive there.
I don't know if you remember... What's one of the... It was Robbie Williams.
Yeah.
Yes.
A few years ago. I mean, they had a sold-out world tour. You couldn't give the tickets away
in
Durban.
What happened? Durban, it was half empty.
It was the only country in the world.
The only venue.
I mean, sorry, city in the world.
In the whole... the only venue in the whole world where the Oaks. I'm rather going to sit in my board here in the wake, bro. Wait for a wave to break.
No, they were really bad at this. And then Durbin complains that they get left off of
the
schedule. You'll notice all of the big comics leave them off the schedule now. Mark Lottering doesn't do it anymore. No, I don't do no it one anymore. Goes to Stuart Durbin. Doesn't do it anymore. And you know, the big five comedy shows going there. And you know, hopefully, Durbin, if you're listening up, I challenge you. Come and check out the show. You got a killer comics.
Listen,
and
if you had a Durbin venue like you have in Cape Town for comedy, it would fail in like 3 weeks. It'd cost you a fortune.
Right? 2.5 weeks.
You could just take Coco's at Umhlanga Sands, you know, they give you that little venue there.
Now we've got a 20-seater. Yeah, perhaps you could pull it off. A 200-seater like we've got in Cape Town, for example. That's hard to do. Fill up a 200-seater in Cape Town on a Wednesday night. It's not challenging, bro.
All right, we've come to the end of this. We're running out of time. We've got things to do, people to see, places to go. But Kurt, well done on another great show, which is happening now. If you want to get the tickets for this, you need to operate quickly. It's happening at Monte Cassino and in Cape Town, and you are for your sins doing Durbin as well. Doors open 7:30 p.m. The show starts at 8 p.m. It's about 2.5 hours of fantastic comedy. Tickets available at Compy Ticket, range from 180 rand if you're poor to 350 rand if you're rich. And the show is PG-16, so don't bring your 13-year-old. All right, so it's Stuart Taylor, it's John Flismas, Skulk Poseidon, Tatsun Konza, and the brilliant Kurt Skrunrod. Thank you so much, dude.
Thanks for having us, man.
Nice to see you. All right, coming up, it is Savings Month. You know about that, right, Al?
No, are you saving? I don't do, no.
Are you doing something good with your savings plans?
I don't. I need to learn more
information. Ways to save money? Well, we've got some useful info for you. It's all part of what we're doing with Coronation for the month of July. And here is yet another take we've managed to get with the brilliant people at Coronation to be able to allow those people among us, like me, who are not that good at saving, to find ways to do that. And maybe you're in the same boat.
Leading investment house Coronation is a registered financial services provider that manages the long-term savings of millions of South Africans. And if you have a pension fund, a retirement annuity, or unit trust, they may even look after yours. There's a huge amount of financial expertise and knowledge contained within the walls of Coronation, which is how they're able to see the unseen and help you to save more, in the true sense, by encouraging you to put money aside every month instead of spending it. Joining me today as part of National Saving Month is Coronation's personal investment specialist, Christo Linnefelt. We've met Christo a couple of times before, and it's always good to have him here because he knows what he's talking about. Last week, we talked about undertaking a personal audit to see where you can meaningfully save money, and you had some innovative suggestions around the unseen ways to save. So thanks for that, Christo. Where do we start today?
So, hi, Gareth. The first thing I'll say is it is daunting to look at your bank statements and go through them and audit them. Sometimes some things can be a little bit shocking. I'm happy to tell you that I did it myself, and I'm happy to report back that I have cancelled that double insurance on my cell phone now.
Good.
And really, what is this all about? It's being aware, looking out for those pitfalls that we are being bombarded with all the time in terms of offers and how to save when we spend, and taking back that control, right? And it really feels good once you do it.
Yeah.
And we discussed some of the ideas around managing that. You know, don't store your credit card details. Do your audit. And effectively stay off that upgrade train that we discussed. And if you can apply some of those, hopefully you'll have some extra money left at the end of the month and you can put that to good use.
Look, after last week, I made a checklist and I've gone through all of those things, but sometimes it is tough to say no, especially when you are talked into buying something or you're enticed into buying it because they tell you if you don't, you'll miss out. So it could have to do with something that's actually happening. Maybe there's a concert going on and, you know, there's an expensive ticket up for grabs rather than the one that you could afford. So you go, this never happened again. Let me do this. Companies say it's available for a limited time. We discussed this the first time we talked. Or they make you feel that you're going to lose something if you don't buy. I mean, I've fallen for FOMO before.
Mm-hmm.
You go, you know what? I work hard. I deserve a break. I'm going to spend this money that I don't have. And then you end up regretting it for weeks and weeks afterwards. But we're all guilty of the same thing, right?
Yep. So we get bombarded by these offers all the time. And really, they appeal to that, you know, almost, it's almost like a peer pressure type emotion. It's don't miss out, you know, that fear of missing out.
Have you got your FOMO under control?
I'd love to say 100% yes, but I hate missing out. I really do hate missing out. So
yeah,
it is hard work and it takes a lot of discipline to deploy the antithesis to FOMO, which is JOMO, the joy of missing out. So effectively turning it on its head and convincing yourself that there's real joy in missing out on some things. I mean, if you think about it, saving in the traditional context, not saving by buying things at off price, saving, putting real money aside. Mm-hmm. Saving is like the ultimate JOMO. You know, you're effectively delaying immediate gratification for some reward later on. So, you know, that impulse to just say yes to things, to just go with the flow, you effectively have to resist that. And you're doing that, and that's JOMO, but you're doing that so that you can effectively have a better experience sometime in the future.
Right.
And it's difficult, but, you know, it can pay off. So think about the delayed gratification of being able to use those savings to put on to use as a deposit on a house, for instance.
Right.
I remember doing that myself. You know, when I just graduated, you know, going out in the world and finding accommodation, for instance, not earning much money, you know, the first thing I did was, instead of some of my peers going out and renting a fairly decent place, you know, I put myself up in a digs, very dingy place, I must say.
You survived.
I survived. I had some experiences there. There were some real FOMO experiences as well. But, you know, that was worth it because I managed to save up some money and deploy that later on into a deposit for my own place. And that's a difficult thing. It takes a hell of a lot of discipline, but I think it's well worth it.
All right, so it is National Savings Month, and people, obviously, a lot of people won't care about that and they won't think about it at all. But it gives all of us an opportunity to just assess the situation. And every single decision you make with your money, you could think critically about, and you could be, you know, sensitive to the decision itself and whether or not it's going to have positive outcomes for you. Or you can just live and kind of see what happens and stay in survival mode, and whatever comes in, you spend. And a lot of people do that.
Mm.
But if you do manage to get the message, and if you're listening to these episodes of what we're doing here, trying to encourage people to be more aware of their money and saving, what can you do with your money if you have saved it? And it doesn't have to be a lot. Let's just say you save a little bit.
No. So, I mean, just to put a hard number on it, you can save with Coronation for 500 rand a month.
Right.
That's it. So, I mean, I don't think the hurdle's too high.
No.
The real point is you take that money and you put it to work. You put it to work as hard as you possibly can. And that is where guys like ourselves come in. We don't get it right all the time, but the objective for us is to do everything in our power to put your hard-earned money to work so that you can effectively get a greater reward from that money at some stage in the future. So how does it work? Well, over time, you at least want to beat inflation, right? Otherwise, you're just going nowhere because things get more expensive over time. But what if you can beat inflation by a healthy margin over time? What if it's 4, 5, 6% above inflation over time? Well, you know, we spoke about the power of compounding a few weeks ago, and the numbers do get big on you over time. And that's the real power, is to put it to work. If you need help from guys like ourselves, we can do that for you so that you can really get a proper reward at the end of the day.
So in other words, instead of just having today's money at today's value,
yes,
and maybe keeping that at zero, let's say you just put it under the mattress and you don't save it, that at least is better than spending it, but it's still not great.
Correct.
The next step up would be to have it perform at roughly inflation,
yeah,
which means that it's going to be the same money today as it will be in the future.
Yeah.
But if you can do better than that, which is a step up from that, why wouldn't you?
Exactly. So if you can, you know, put some numbers on it, if you can beat inflation by 6% per annum, and you do that for 12 years, you've effectively doubled the purchasing power of that money. So for every 500 rand you put away, you can now buy something worth 1,000 rands in today's terms.
Yeah,
and that's the power of it.
That's brilliant. So, okay, are there any other things that you think we need to know before we wrap this up? Because I think people like these practical tips. It's been really helpful to, you know, clean up our finances,
to also not fall for the advertising messages. Are there other things around National Savings Month that you've got thinking about yourself and that you want to share with us?
Yeah, so maybe just, you know, it's all top of mind now. It is National Savings Month. Just to recap, we are not telling you to forfeit that flat white in the mornings. If that is your thing and it gives you a kick, I certainly know I can't function without it. That's not what we say. We're not telling you to sacrifice things. What we are asking you is to just raise your level of awareness. And we are here to effectively almost redefine the term savings. Savings is not buying something on a 50% sale. Saving is delaying spending and putting that money to work and by investing it.
And there are big things that fall outside of this. I mean, if people are making investments in property or they're putting money into a, for example, one of your, let's say your unit trust investments.
Yeah.
Or perhaps they're buying a car because they need to get to and from work. Those are justifiable.
Exactly.
That's not you splurging on stupid
stuff. Yeah. I'm not telling you to, you know, pull your kids out of a decent school and start to homeschool them.
We're saving. kids, I'm sorry, we're saving. We're going to put you in the pantry every day and make you read books.
But just keep it top of mind. Understand that we all have
kids, give me those shoes back. We heard this thing on Cliff Central about saving. And we're going to have to get you much, much worse shoes that we're going to make out of banana leaves.
That's actually not a bad idea. So just keep it top of mind. Understand that we are human beings with lizard brains making very impulsive decisions. We all fall into those traps all the time. Keep your awareness with you, your wits with you, and take control of what you spend money on. And think about JOMO. It's not just about the fear of missing out. It's about the joy of missing out. Yeah. Sometimes it's nice to not buy something.
It should really be called JOMO now, because it's the joy of missing out in the present, right? Yeah, in the moment. But in the future, you're going to be happy.
That's it. Yeah.
Anybody who doesn't know the benefit of finding 100 rand in a pocket of an old jacket won't understand this, but most of us have, and it feels really good.
That's it.
Thank you for sharing, Christo. I think National Savings Month is a great time to be reminded of how you could be more careful about what you spend your money on. Choose not to spend and instead put that money aside into a savings or an investment vehicle with a bank or an asset manager like Coronation. A good option is investing in a Coronation Unit Trust fund, which is the simplest, most cost-effective way for you to invest with Coronation. It also gives you exposure to a basket of different financial assets such as shares, bonds, listed property. All you need to do is start investing with Coronation today for as little as 500 rand a month. You can also give them a call or visit coronation.com. They've got Christo there. They've got a lot of other smart people there who will help you make these decisions. And I hope you're encouraged to put away some extra money that you could, for the long term, end up reaping huge benefit for and from in the future. It really is worth giving up that impulse or convenience purchase for long-term financial security. Thanks, Christo.
Thanks, Gareth.
For vision, touch, taste, sensory exploration of molecular gastronomy, visit Quantum Tastery.
With molecular portion sizes at astronomical prices.
12 experimental courses heightened by ultra-modern ambience.
More like 12 courses of crumbs, smears, and specks of food eaten in near silence.
It's easy to get tempted into unnecessary spending. That's why Coronation is encouraging South Africans to save instead this National Savings Month. To invest, talk to your financial advisor. Coronation. Trust is earned. Coronation is an authorized FSP.
This is CliffCentral.com.